This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. When it comes to writing for young people, there aren't many writers more accomplished than Jacqueline Woodson. She's the winner of the Margaret A. Edwards Award for Lifetime Achievement in Writing for Young Adults, the recipient of 3 Newbery Honors, and two-time finalist for the National Book Award. Her most recent book, Brown Girl Dreaming, was the winner of the 2014 National Book Award for Young People's Literature. It is a memoir written in verse about growing up in the 1960s and 70s in segregated South Carolina, in Ohio, and her move to New York City. Jacqueline Woodson is in the Triangle for a discussion tomorrow at the Chapel Hill Public Library, but first she joins me, Jacqueline Woodson. Welcome to State of Things. Good to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Tell us about this. Brown Girl Dreaming is a memoir that begins with your birth in Ohio, an event that I doubt, no doubt, you did not remember. So that leads to the question of your research. How did you research this book?
I went back to Ohio. I talked to my relatives there. My dad is still in Ohio. My aunt, who's a genealogist, thankfully, lives in Ohio, just outside of Athens. So I did a lot of research in terms of my family, my ancestors before my dad, and my grandmother and great-grandmother. So there was a lot of research involved in both going back to Columbus and also back to Greenville, because I left there when I was 7 years old.
Was that interesting to you, something that had been of interest, your genealogy, before you decided to write the memoir?
The memoir started because my mom died suddenly, and I wanted to figure out who she was before she was my mother. And that was kind of the seed for getting this memoir on the page. I had written a book called Showway, which was a history of my family along the maternal line. And this time I wanted to explore both the maternal and the paternal line. I had always heard stories about the Woodsons and who we were. And because my aunt's a genealogist, traced all the way back to basically Adam and Eve. But I didn't... there was a lot I didn't know.
The book is written in free verse. Tell us about that choice.
It's written in memory, and I thought about that. I thought if I was going to write a memoir, it would be dishonest to write it as a straight narrative, because that's not how memory comes to us. It comes to us in these small moments with all of this white space around it, and I wanted to construct that on the page. I wanted to put the memories down as they came to me, and the more I wrote, the more I remembered.
It does have the effect of these kind of snapshots that capture, obviously, more than just the visual. It's a very sensual experience as you go from moment to moment. The narrative thread is not as keen, it's not as sharp, but there are these sharp pictures. And it seems to me that the book captures what it does in the image, and then what is also what is lost, the separation. Separation that's not expressed in words is palpable in this book.
It is a book about longing, and I think that's a history of anyone who has ever been part of any kind of migration. And because my family was part of the Great Migration, moving from the South to the North, during the years of Jim Crow, when the situation for people of color was just so absolutely oppressive in the South. But as a child, the South was all I knew for so long. So there is always that pull between home and home. And so that gets explored a lot in the book, along with finding my voice as a writer and the longing to be as brilliant as my sister.
That is also very clear. Your sister, Odella, you write about her being exceptional, excellent, all those notes coming home. You've won all these awards for your writing. Every time you get an award, do you think, I've got to tell Odella? Is that the first person who comes to mind?
She usually knows before I do. She's so funny. She's so proud of me. I think I talk about passion a lot, and how what brilliance is that passion recognized and acknowledged some way. And I feel like for myself, the passion has always been to write, and that writing is my brilliance, the way academics were my sister's brilliance, and music was my brother's brilliance. And I think it's so important, especially for young people, because I do think we all have some brilliance, whether we're singing it or playing it in a sport or writing it or painting it, that passion get recognized and that brilliance get recognized through it.
You talked about that first moment when you started to write yourself and couldn't even really make words, but just the sensation of writing for you was a real sense of liberation. And identity, in a sense, that first moment. Was it the first time, perhaps, when you thought, well, this is the me that isn't part of the family? This is not part of the family, but
the
this is the me that
knows.
The me nobody knows. Yeah.
I think it was what I remember about learning to write my name. And as you know from the book, I came late to reading. I struggled as a reader. And when I began to write my name, what I realized was how powerful just the physical act of putting letters on the page was, and how the letters led to words, and words led to sentences, and sentences led to paragraphs. And I had all of that power. And so I think that's why that stays with me, so that once I realized I could write my name, I knew I could write.
We talked about absence and longing being a very important part of this book. Your father plays a part very early in the book. In fact, his reluctance to go back to the South or go down South, where the treatment for African Americans at the time was much worse than it was in Columbus, Ohio, is you write about that in the book. But his absence also was painful to you. And I wonder if I could get you to read from the book. This is a section called Sometimes.
Sometimes. There is only one other house on our block where Father doesn't live. When somebody asks why, the boy says, "He died." The girl looks off down the block, her thumb slowly rising to her mouth. The boy says, "I was a baby," says she doesn't remember him, and points to his silent sister. Sometimes I lie about my father. "He died," I say. "In a car wreck," or "he fell off a roof," or maybe "he's coming soon," next week and next week and next week. But if my sister's nearby, she shakes her head, says she's making up stories again, says we don't have a father anymore, says our grandfather's our father now, says sometimes that's the way things happen.
Jacqueline Woodson reading from her memoir, Brown Girl Dreaming. She's in town for a conversation at the Chapel Hill Public Library tomorrow night at 6 o'clock here with us on The State of Things Today. There's another part in the book much later on where you talk about writing about your summer vacation, having to do that exercise. And I think then you talk about in that moment, you know, other students asking, "Did that really happen?" Kids ask. "Yeah," I say, "if it didn't happen, how would I know what to write?"
I was always making up stories as a kid, and I got in trouble for lying a lot. And I've had a teacher who said, you know, instead of lying, write it down, because if you write it down, it's not a lie anymore. It's fiction. And so I told stories all the time, and then eventually I was writing them down all the time. But as a kid, my friends were fascinated by my stories and fascinated by how story came to me. They didn't understand how I memorized so many published stories, but also how I could make up these stories that seem so believable to them.
Well, how does that work, though, when you're coming to write a memoir? As we said, you know, there are these things that we all have to deal with, our brilliant siblings, the absence of a loved one, all of those things that we're trying to make sense of, and then, of course, the racial dynamics of moving south and north and the New York City, all of that. To what extent is memoir a kind of fiction? Does it give you control over those very difficult aspects of anybody's life?
By the time I got to Brown Girl Dreaming, I had already written, 29, 30 books. So I had always, there was always some Jacqueline Woodson in everything I wrote. And I think when I sat down to write this memoir, what I realized is where so many of those stories came from. And I think that's kind of dangerous for a writer, to know where the stories in your head come from and to be too conscious of that. So I think I was really trying to nail the truth in this book. Of course, it's my truth, it's my memory, and not write around it and create something fictive, but to really get to the absolute essence of the moments.
Did it teach you anything? Were you surprised about anything in your life?
I think one thing, I was just talking to my friend Stephanie this morning, I think it made me sad to have been such a difficult daughter to my mom in some ways. I think realizing that my mom had been a single mom who migrated to the North mainly for opportunity, had raised four children alone, had ended up buying a house and kind of living that great migration dream. I don't call it the American dream. I call it the great migration dream. And to have not understood why she was so tired so much of the time, or why she talked about working her fingers to the bone, or why she was so upset when we were by our ingratitude and all of that stuff. So I think I learned so much about my mom and my dad and, you know, the strength of my family.
Religion plays an awful important part in this as well. Your grandmother, a Jehovah's Witness, and insisted that you practice. Talk about the importance of that in your life growing up and now.
Well, I grew up Jehovah's Witness. I also grew up Muslim. So I think my grandma and my mom thought there wasn't enough religion in our house already. So when my uncle returned from prison, he had converted to the Nation of Islam and was a devout Muslim. And in our house, there was a Bible and there was the Quran. You know, my uncle knelt toward Mecca. We prayed and in a different way, but we also prayed with him. Our diet completely changed. You know, pork was erased from our diet forever. And we really had a deep sense of two truths, the Muslim truth and the Christian truth. And I think one thing that happened is when I grew up and I realized there were these fights between the two, I didn't understand them because I would think, but aren't we the same? Because I had grown up with both those belief systems. And I think of myself as a very spiritual person. It's hard to grow up in an organized religion and not walk away with some of it. And so I definitely have stuff that I still deeply believe in as a witness and stuff that I deeply believe in as a Muslim. And the world I inhabit as a spiritual person is kind of a combination of that and a lot of other stuff, too.
Can they combine? You have in here as well a kind of a creed that you've written out. And maybe I can ask you to read it for us and we can talk a little bit about that.
I believe. Is that the one?
I believe. I think that's the name of it. It's a creed. And I believe I have it on page. I can't.
I believe. Yes.
Yeah. What I believe. Okay. 317.
I believe in God and evolution. I believe in the Bible and the Quran. I believe in Christmas and the New World. I believe that there is good in each of us, no matter who we are or what we believe in. I believe in the words of my grandfather. I believe in the city and the South, the past and the present. I believe in black people and white people coming together. I believe in nonviolence and power to the people. I believe in my little brother's pale skin and my own dark brown. I believe in my sister's brilliance and the two easy books I love to read. I believe in my mother on a bus and black people refusing to ride. I believe in good food, good friends and good food. I believe in Jenny Pumps and Jump Ropes, Malcolm and Martin, Buckeyes and Birmingham, writing and listening, bad words and good words. I believe in Brooklyn. I believe in one day and someday and this perfect moment called now.
Jacqueline Woodson reading from Brown Girl Dreaming. She's going to be at the Chapel Hill Public Library tomorrow at 6 o'clock. You know, it's interesting to think about those creeds and how we navigate this world in which sort of the social norms do disadvantage, certainly women and minorities, and this is the landscape that we have to traverse and how you can sort of build it. I mean, you also talk about Angela Davis in here, Black Power Movement and Revolution, which had its own creeds and its doctrines. Navigating those, it seems to me, is kind of the challenge. And when I think about your daddy, your grandfather, his reluctance to embrace religion and that easy style that he had, it seems, and was definitely married to your grandmother, who was a Jehovah's Witness.
Mm-hmm.
That marriage and his easy style and sort of how to navigate this is a kind of a brilliant message, it seems to me.
It is. You know, I grew up in a time when you could let your kids know which one of them were your favorites. And my daddy, my grandfather, but we called him daddy, was very clear that I was his favorite. And so I adored him. And one of the things I learned that I hadn't known was that My grandfather's family were the witnesses first, and my grandmother embraced the religion as my grandfather moved away from it. And I hadn't known that. I think from him I got that you can be a good person in the world and God would love you, you know, and without you having to adhere to the confines of an organized religion. And I also, I think in terms of navigating the world, I think anybody who is born outside of a quote unquote mainstream society is being raised with a double, triple, quadruple consciousness. And so they're always figuring out ways to navigate the world, and they don't know any, they have nothing to compare it to. And I think I was very old the first time I realized that this double consciousness wasn't a part of every human being, that some people only had to navigate one world. And I think if I had not had the tools I had, I wouldn't have been able to create the many characters I created or the many worlds. And in Brown Girl Dreaming, I do write that piece about when there are many worlds, you can decide which one you walk into each day. And I think that's it's just really important to me to have that kind of access to the world and have that kind of information about the world.
Jacqueline Woodson, award-winning author of Brown Girl Dreaming, thank you so much for being on The State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Jacqueline Woodson's in the Triangle for a discussion tomorrow night about her latest book, published in 2014, Jacqueline Woodson's Brown Girl Dreaming. She's going to be at the Chapel Hill Public Library at 6 o'clock. To find out more information, you can go to our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley's our technical director. Andrew Tai is our intern. Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.